First of all, I'd wish to thank Tom Sauer of the Council on History, Philosophy, and Sociology of Soil Science, and Harry Schomburg of the Division S6 Soil and Water Management and Conservation for getting approval and support of this session, which commemorates the 75th anniversary of the Soil Conservation Service and the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Also, I'd like to thank all the attendees and presenters here. The presentations today cover diverse activities of the Soil Conservation Service and NRCS. There are some unifying threads, however. Together, the topics represent two important points that Hugh Hammond Bennett, first chief of the Soil Conservation Service, emphasized. First, in thinking about solutions to conservation issues, he said that you had to have the specific information, especially about the soils and the other climatic factors. He also emphasized that all the disciplines needed to be used. There were no panaceas for all soils and all landscapes. Second, he preached in the 1920s and 30s that it was time to take the soil survey information at hand and to work on soil erosion problems. It is fitting that some papers today cover the applied aspect of soil and water, the soil and water conservation movement. So I'm going to go now into my presentation on Hugh Hammond Bennett and the creation of the Soil Conservation Service. And I may have to go through some of this a little bit rapidly. So most of this is based on or can be found in a couple of articles that I published in the Journal of Soil and Water Conservation in 2009, 2010, and the service paid the fee, so the full text is online there for you. So if you just probably Google JSWC and Helms and Bennett and so on, you'll get them to come up. Ah, okay. Left click. Oh, here's Bennett in his early days as a soil surveyor in the Department of Agriculture. Let's just review quickly his early career. He was born in Wadesboro, North Carolina, and he attended the University of North Carolina, where he earned a degree mostly in chemistry, but also took quite a lot of geology. He joined the Bureau of Soils and the Department of Agriculture in 1903, and then in September 1933, he became director of the sort of temporary Soil Erosion Service. And then an act of Congress, April 27, 1935, created the Soil Conservation Service, and he remained and shifted from being director to being the chief at that time. So that is the date we are celebrating with the 75th anniversary. When he was at the University of North Carolina, this gentleman, Collier Cobb, was a professor of geology, found out that the Department of Agriculture had started these soil survey activities. Also, it happened that the State Department of Agriculture wanted to set up a series of experiment stations, and also they wanted to help instruct the farmers about, you know, best use of their soils. So they were interested in the soil survey. So these sort of two things came together. Cobb found out about this, and he developed a curriculum in soil survey work, and quite a number of his graduates, Bennett being only one, joined the Bureau of Soils back then. Some of the other names some of you would recognize probably, but we don't have time to go into all that this morning. Bennett first, he was hired to work in the laboratory in Washington, but they first said, why don't you go over to Davidson County, Tennessee, and work on the soil survey? So he went over there, and of course he had spent his life on a farm and enjoyed the outdoors and so on, and he decided that's the kind of work for me. I'd rather be doing this than working in the laboratory. So he worked there, and I've got several surveys here that he worked on pointed out here, and I'll make the point as to why these were sort of significant in his career on to becoming a soil conservationist. It was in Louisa County, Virginia, in 1905, that he sort of had his epiphany about soil conservation, and our people in the Virginia State Office are working to get a historical marker put up in this location. There, he sort of compared the soils of farmed areas with some forested areas that he thought had not been cleared and noticed the different depth of the topsoil and came to conclusion about, and in some cases there were not gullies, so he came to some conclusions about sheet erosion and its effects on productivity and the soil profile. Then in Fairfield County, South Carolina, in 1911, they mapped in that soil survey about 90,000 acres of formerly cultivated land so cut to pieces with gullies that they just classified it as non-arable, rough, gullied land. Then in the survey in Lauderdale County, Mississippi, of course, during this time, they're naming these soil series, which all of you are so familiar with. And one of the very productive soils for cotton and so on was the Orangeburg sandy loam, but it was also susceptible to erosion on slopes. And so they start making recommendations about treatment of the land based on the soil type. So he's refers to these gullies or caves that can develop in this Orangeburg sandy loam. And so that they outlined these areas in the soil survey and recommended that they stay in pasture or forestry or orchards. And then these things eventually went into the development of what he called the land capability classification. Some of the younger people in the service and soil survey may not be familiar with it, but before we beefed up the interpretations related to soil taxonomy, it was one of the main means of making recommendations about use of soils. So in this map, I've just given you a map of where he worked on a lot of surveys, worked in the Blackland Prairie of Alabama, and also he got to work, he was inspector for the East, so he got to work outside of the South some, but you see that's heavily concentrated in the southern state. So he's getting to move around and get a good idea about soils. And he took some of this information and wrote his first book on the soils and agriculture of the southern states. And this goes through and discusses many of the soil types in the South and the best uses of them. There again, the soil survey information is being used to make recommendations on soil uses. This is the map that was included in his book on the soils and agriculture of the southern states. And as you see here, he once again emphasizes the soil types that can be used for agriculture. Some need some rotations and so on, and then there are others which should not really be used for cropland, but should be used for pasture or forestry. And this is a somewhat later picture, but these ideas, after he becomes chief of the Soil Conservation Service, go into the land capability classification, the idea of working with nature and using land within its capabilities. Also, Bennett's first wife died in childbirth. They had one daughter. He later remarried and had a son. But during this period, after I think his first wife dying, he went on a number of foreign assignments. And his daughter-in-law once told me she thought that was one reason that he was able to do that and was open to doing it. So, in addition to the South, he also worked in Alaska and a great deal in Central America, and he got to see soils in a different setting. He made remarks about similarities with some of these tropical soils and some of their some of the soils in the South that had some similar properties. He worked in Panama after the Panama Canal. Some of those workers weren't going to leave, and they were looking for places where they might make a living raising crops. Some of the work in South America was related to the effort to try to find a source of for rubber production, because after World War I and so on, they were concerned with the ability to acquire rubber, so they were trying to figure out places where they might acquire rubber. And then he did the In the 1920s, he and R.V. Allison did a major soil survey of Cuba. I don't know, it's about 300 pages long or so on. His report on Alaska is also quite lengthy when they were trying to separate out which lands should be in the forest reserves and which were suitable for agriculture. This just mentioned some of those reasons for these surveys that I mentioned. Yeah, some of his letters he talks about every day he got up and went out to travel, something new. He would see something new in the tropics. He was also fascinated that some of the soils there had this very high infiltration rate. Also, during this time, he's writing his soil survey bulletins, but also he's writing for, you know, farm magazines and journals, and so in some of the professional journals. And I just cited this one article from Geographical Review where he's starting to try to categorize the factors controlling erosion. One significant event in his campaign for soil conservation program was the publication of this bulletin, Soil Erosion, a National Menace. The Secretary of Agriculture backed it, so he had support there. This generated some attention, and it led to, it assisted in the pass clause in the Department of Agricultural Appropriations Bill for 1930, actually passed in 29, which appropriated some money for some experiment stations. Bennett made the point, we need to do something about this, but we also need to know what to do about it. So we need to do some research. He traveled around the country. He had identified what he referred to as soil erosion areas, and when they acquired this money, he tried to set up the experiment stations in these areas where climate, soils, the type of agriculture and crops grown and the methods had resulted in erosion. You'll see he's got one up here in the Driftless area in Wisconsin, the Blackland Prairie in Texas, and other areas that you would be familiar with. So I just have a few scenes from some of the work being done on some of these experiment stations where they compared treated plots to untreated plots to try to figure out which methods of strip cropping and terracing and crop rotations work the best. Here's some terrace building at the station in Statesville, North Carolina. Then they got a big break when the Depression came along, sort of has echoes of today, the need to put people to work and to try to do projects that are good for the public good. And first, President Roosevelt introduced a bill into Congress to create a civilian conservation corps. And one of the purposes was the prevention of soil erosion. Of course, the Soil Erosion Service had not gotten started at that time in March, so they were not there to take advantage of that. But later on, they got many civilian conservation corps camps to work with them. This is Roosevelt and colleagues on their way up to the first camp in the Shenandoah Valley. I'm going to have to speed along. Another thing that happened that was very important was John Collier, Commissioner of Indian Affairs, sort of turned Indian policy on its head. He wanted improve the condition on the reservations, and soil erosion was a problem. He went to, there's Collier, he went to Henry Wallace, who was Secretary of Agriculture, for some assistance. Wallace put him in touch with Bennett, and the people from the Bureau of Indian Affairs came over to USDA, and Bennett was selected to head up a committee to go to the Navajo Reservation and to study it. This is the Harvey Hotel in Gallup, New Mexico, where they met. They traveled around the reservation. Here are some of the photographs they took and attached to the report. They met, Collier and Bennett made presentations before the Navajo Tribal Council. They endorsed the program. Later on, there was some dissatisfaction with the sheep reduction program, but we don't have time to go quite into that. Also, at about this time, the National Industrial Recovery Act for additional public employment and so on was passed. And it was this was about the time they're on the trip, and this will be the funding for the Soil Erosion Service. A special board of public works under the NIRA appoints $5 million for soil erosion. And so the a plan comes out that they're going to, the Bureau of Agricultural Engineering has been pushing for a major program on terracing, and Bennett finds out about this, and he again, as I pointed out, emphasized that you needed to use agronomy and soils and various forestry, and not just engineering. So he charges into Assistant Secretary of Agriculture Tugwell's room and makes the case to him. Tugwell backs him up. First, they recommend somebody else to head up this soil erosion service, but then that a professor at the University of Chicago turns it down. Bennett is selected, and Wallace says he thinks he was the best qualified man from the job from the beginning. So they start setting up demonstration projects in these soil erosion areas. They have some. I'm going to recommend you read the article. I have to get through this to stay on track here. But there are conflicts with existing agencies and so on. And so it's something of a struggle. But they get these demonstration projects going. They prove popular. The money's expiring for the work, so they've got to do something. And this forces the issue of whether this work shall be in the Department of the Interior or Agriculture. FDR finally decides they will put it in the Department of Agriculture. And in 1934, some of the dust storms started from the Great Plains. The first one swept to the East Coast in 1934. Bennett was quoted in the New York Times. None of the first demonstration projects had been in the Dust Bowl area of the southern Great Plains, but then they set one up there. Also, as they're making this move to agriculture and considering legislation, another big dust storm comes over in 1935. Also during that time, Roosevelt calls Bennett in and asks him if he minds going back to USDA, and he says no, he'd spent his life there. I wanted to deal briefly, the story on the dust storm coming over when he is testifying, I think Bennett got a little confused and said that it was before the Senate when they were having hearings. I've investigated it quite a lot, and it was actually before the House of Representatives, and it was reported in the newspapers. These clouds moved quickly. It was over the Mississippi Valley about evening of the day before the hearing, and then it got to Washington, and this was a photographer for Science News who took this. So but it all went smoothly there with after the dust storm and the bill creating the agency was passed. And I've just got a few more here I'm going to get through. This shows the things just exploded after they got the legislation. They had about 40 demonstration projects. They ended up having well over 100. They had a few civilian conservation corps camps. Eventually, they would have about, I think, 900 of those, about, I think, a fourth or so of the, well, an eighth of those were occupied by African-American enrollees. This is where the demonstration projects were. You will notice that it corresponds with some of the erosion problem areas in the southeast and so on. So this shows you the expansion of the demonstration projects after they get the legislation. Just to say, this is the Coon Valley area of Wisconsin. You see how they converted that to strip cropping. I just wanted to make the point. It's rather amazing, I think, that he succeeded in this. And Bennett thought it was a good idea that he didn't argue with going back to USDA, but he thought it was a good idea they got their start in the interior, where he was sort of free to act without the other agencies objecting and saying, we actually own that part of the program, or we own that part of the program. Here's a scene with he and his wife with some strip cropping up in Wisconsin, and a scene of him there at the end. We're going to have some extra time at our break, and I've used my time, and so I'm not going to take any questions at this point because we want to stay on schedule. I apologize for breaking all the rules.